Pop, Trina Parker here. And today with me, I have a first-time guest, and his name is Lucas. And is it Irving?
Irving, yeah.
Irving? Okay, I said it right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this, and yeah, should be pretty exciting. I think we got plenty to talk about.
Yeah. So let's start off with just talking more about you. Why don't you tell us about yourself?
Sure. I live here in Kansas City. I run a Facebook page for Muppet collectors called the Muppet Collection Page. We just hit our 8th year, and we just crossed 11th followers, and yeah, really enjoy it. It had started out as a page really just to feature the, at the time, upcoming Diamond Select figures of the Muppets. They had released a wave back about 8 years ago, and I had the idea to start a Facebook page just talking about them. But mm-hmm. I personally was kind of itching to talk about the Palisades figures as well, because even from the onset, like, the Diamond Select figures are great, but the Palisades figures, that's a bar that is honestly going to be impossible to reach from here on out. And I was dying to feature that stuff as well. I had renamed it the Muppet Collection Page, and it started off from just a few people from different Muppet sites that I kind of knew of over the years. Several of them helped me out starting off with the page. Many of them still help me out. And yeah, it's a lot of fun to do. It's a nice hobby, and it also got me into toy photography. I felt like I had a lot to work with, but I also had a lot to learn. Mm-hmm. Before this, I was not a photographer in any stretch of the imagination. I had a couple of people who were excellent photographers kind of gave me some tips on, and I feel like my photos today are far better than the ones when I had initially started. And that's, again, one of my favorite things, one of my favorite features to have on my page is the toy shots I do of the Muppets.
Okay. Yeah. So I didn't say it before, but I'm sure you probably guessed what this episode is about. We're talking about the Muppets.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Muppets, it has such a big history and stuff. It's just so many things to talk about. So this probably won't be my only Muppet episode. I'll probably do more in the future.
That's okay.
Yeah. But other than the Muppets, before we get into the Muppets, who are your own personal, like, quirky icons?
You know, I'm also a stand-up comic. I've actually taken some years off, and now I'm getting back into it. I'm a stand-up comic. Funny people in general I tend to gravitate towards.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I have a lot of favorites. One person I've been watching a lot lately is Conan O'Brien. I'm a huge Conan fan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It all started with The Muppet Show, but it wasn't much longer after I got into The Muppets that I found out about Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. I always joke with people that I started watching SNL at 6, and I started getting grounded from it at 7. So, yeah, like, and then of course, like, you know, I think around college, I really started getting into stand-up, and that's what kind of got me interested into that. I'm a huge fan of The Simpsons.
Okay.
Yeah. I also collect a lot of Simpsons, Star Wars, Breaking Bad, X-Men, Aladdin, Parks and Recreation. Like, I have kind of a little bit of everything. Most of the stuff I'm really into, like, the nexus of it tends to be comedy. So, you know, that's, humor's kind of a big part of who I am, if that doesn't sound weird to say. But
no,
yeah.
Like, not I'm, at all. Yeah.
But yeah, like, I'm kind of a naturally goofy person, so, you know, that's why I tend to gravitate towards, like, goofy and way out in left field types of things.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So, I'm sure you have one. Who is your favorite Muppet and why? And if it was, like, a hard choice, you can give me more than...
Sure. So, we're going to talk about this shortly, but I do want to say, in the Richard Hunt biography, as a mm-hmm. cute kitty of your cat...
My cat Gallifrey just came on the screen. Like, my daughter had to let her in because she was, like, begging to come in at the door. So, now she's here to mess with me throughout the show.
Very nice. Yeah, so it's funny, in the Richard Hunt biography, like, they talk about the core group of characters, which are, you know, aside from Kermit and Piggy, it's Fozzie, Gonzo, Rolf, Scooter, and Floyd. And I thought it was very interesting that they threw Floyd in there, A, because it gives, like, that was Jerry Nelson's character mm-hmm. whenever they had, like, group scenes with some of the more prominent characters of the Muppet Show.
Yeah.
And look, most people do say, like, Kermit or Gonzo or whoever as their favorite. And those are, and Rolf, those are my favorites as well. Mm-hmm. But I would have to say, just to give him a little bit of love, I would say Floyd. If you really watch him, especially in those later years of The Muppet Show, like his sense of humor, like that's kind of my vein. And so he's also somebody, he's a great musician, great singer. I love watching like the musical numbers he does either on his own or with like some of the guest stars. But he's also the guy who kind of sits in the back with a newspaper and is basically, he is like the guy who's like, can you believe what's going on here? Type of guy, you know? So he's just so cool. But yeah, he's a lot of fun. Other than Jim Henson, I would say Jerry Nelson is probably my second favorite performer in The Muppets. He has a great vocal range. Mm-hmm. He can sing with any voice. He can sing as, you know, the Trash Heap, the Count, Robin, you know, like it's amazing how far his voice can stretch and how he has such great musical control of his voice as well. And he's such a fascinating character that I don't think gets a whole lot of attention. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Floyd is definitely one of my absolute favorites. So I'm going to say.
When I watch episodes of The Muppet Show, I'll have to look out for him a little bit more to see what you're talking about.
Yeah. No, he's an interesting guy, and something Frank Oz talks a lot about, the dynamics of the characters and how there's a lot of gears going at once, and that's what made the show work so well back then. And something Frank says quite often, he is, these characters don't work in a vacuum. You know, everybody plays off of everybody else. Just like when you're at work or dealing with your, you know, there's a push and pull in every direction when you're in a massive group of people that you're very familiar with, you know, and, that's something I really love. You know, like it's funny, I've been probably watching The Muppet Show almost as long as I've been around. And I still learned something going back and watching those episodes. Like, not only how hard they work, but just how simple it seems to the viewer how these characters interact with each other. So, but yeah.
That's a great answer. Great full rounded answer. I think as a kid, for me, I think Kermit was probably my favorite. But now that like I'm older, I feel like I like Gonzo more.
Yeah.
Because like I see, like, you know, he's like a weirdo and he's just doing his thing and he loves Carmela so very much. I think it's like you should find someone who looks at you the way Gonzo looks at Carmela.
Camilla, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of the beautiful thing about Gonzo is he never asks for any kind of permission or forgiveness, mm-hmm. or, you know, may I type of attitude. He is one of himself through and through, and he's not looking to explain himself either, which is great. You know, he just is who he is, and he tends to have some of my funniest lines in all the movies. One of my favorite lines from Muppet Treasure Island is, mm-hmm. when he and Rizzo are in that giant barrel of apples just eating all the apples, and he says something to the extent of, he's like, oh, it's just weird, isn't it? And Rizzo goes, oh, you mean the fact that Sam Arrow is dead? He goes, well, that, and my pants are filled with starfish. Like, it's just said so deadpan. Just something as simple as that is like, all right, whatever.
Yeah.
He's a fun character to watch, and especially if you look at his growth since he came along in 76, because, mm-hmm. he was just kind of this nebbish little puny whatever thing, and then he became like a daredevil artiste by the end of The Muppet Show. Then he's kind of the weird, you know, he kind of brings you out of like a serious situation if you watch like Great Muppet Caper or Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yeah.
And then you get to like The Christmas Carol, Treasure Island, Muppets from Space. Those are kind of like his soulful years, where it's very clear that like you've seen this growth and maturity with him without really losing any of that like initial likability.
Okay. So, you know, how did you get, like, can you recall when you first got introduced to the Muppets, or is this something that's just always been there for you?
It's kind of always been there. So, mm-hmm. I was born in 85. I caught the tail end of the Henson era. So, yeah. I remember the Jim Henson Hour. I still remember watching the Jim Henson Hour on Sunday nights. And when I was very little, I don't know where it came from or how we got it. I just know my mom was the one who bought it. I don't know if it was for a birthday or anything, but I had this VHS tape, called The Kermit and Piggy Story. And there was a set of 10 VHS tapes by Playhouse Video. And it was in 1986 that they were produced. And basically, there are 10 different videos showcasing the best of The Muppet Show. And there's one on, like, country music. There's one on, like, all of Fozzie's best bits. You know, goes on and on. But yeah, the one I had was The Kermit and Piggy Story. And I watched that, like, I'm pretty sure I burnt the tape up.
Okay.
And that, kind of going back to me doing stand-up, I kind of think that was, like, that was like the initial ingredients to whatever sense of humor I have that, you know, has developed to now. Because it's even today, just even though they're all clips from the Muppet Show, like it's how they're put together and how you see like the growth of Kermit and Piggy's relationship. That's really fascinating because Piggy in season 1 and 2 is not the same Miss Piggy that you see in season 5.
Yeah.
She has a lot more depth and complexity. There are episodes where you see growth in her, but that was like the first kind of foray into me really getting into the Muppet Show, because that was the one thing I saw of the Muppet Show for years and years, because we didn't have cable. The only time I really saw the Muppet Show is if we were like on vacation and they had cable at the hotel, or we were visiting aunts and uncles, they had cable, or like I spent a number of years when I was very little in the hospital. And one of the things when I was little, I would watch The Muppet Show and Fraggle Rock all the time. That was the one thing I liked about having surgeries, is that I knew I was going to be able to watch Fraggle Rock and The Muppet Show. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a nice comfort show. Is it still like a comfort show for you?
Yeah, I would. Fraggle Rock certainly is.
Okay.
I think The Muppet Show I see differently, because both of them I love to watch just to study and notice little things. But The Muppet Show is just like, I don't know, it's a cup of coffee with your favorite Danish. It's, you know, taking a vacation by yourself. There's something very personal and comforting when it comes to watching The Muppet Show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've already kind of talked about two of your favorite Muppet projects, which was The Muppet Show and Fraggle Rock. Did you have a favorite episode of The Muppet Show?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, so I just introduced a couple of friends of mine to The Muppet Show. They'd never seen it before, and I wanted to show them this episode. I wanted to watch the Loretta Swit episode of The Muppet Show where Piggy gets fired, and you see all this pent-up anger with Kermit over the years that he's put up with from Miss Piggy, and you also see in one of the very rare times Miss Piggy actually being openly vulnerable, and it's very fascinating, and they picked the perfect guest star to do that show with. Loretta Swit fits in so well with Kermit and Piggy and the other characters. She does a great veterinarian's hospital with Rolf and Janice as she fills in for Miss Piggy. Yeah, it's like really from beginning to end, that is probably my favorite, because Kermit and Piggy will always be the center of the Muppets, and that is one of those like landmark episodes that really show you not only the evolution of their relationship, but why the Muppets were so huge.
Yeah.
And how they got to be so huge.
So I'm an 80s kid too. We're born in the 80s as well.
Nice.
So when you see, have seen these episodes for the first time, or just seen it as an adult, are there times where you'll see the guests and you're like, I have no idea who that is, and you have to Google it? Because that's been me a couple of times. I mean, a lot of them I do know who they are, but some of them are like, I have no clue who this is. Let me look it up. Oh, they were a big deal. You know?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, one of the more fascinating, I'm glad you brought this up, one of the more fascinating guest stars they had was in season 5. It was a man named Wally Bogue. Wally Bogue, he did an act at Disney World for decades and decades. He was one of the most famous live performers at the Walt Disney World Resort.
Okay.
And he was a balloon artist. He did jokes. He did tricks. And what's even more, he was Steve Martin's mentor. So when Steve Martin was a very young kid, he lived in California. He wanted to go and work so badly. He didn't care what it was. He wanted to work so badly in Walt Disney at the attraction. Somehow got paired up with Wally Bogue. Learned his comedic timing. Everything that he talks about, if you ever get the chance to read Steve Martin's book, Born Standing Up. It's really fascinating because he does talk about how much he learned from Wally Bogue. And it's so fascinating that he ends up being a guest star in The Muppet Show. It's a very funny episode as well.
When we talked before, you also mentioned the Muppet movie was your other project. So what is it about the Muppet movie that stands out for you?
I think what makes that movie stand out from the rest of them is that at that point in time with the Muppets, they were able to still be very raw with how they wrote the characters, how they how they shot the characters, just kind of the jokes. It feels just a little bit more loose than from, let's say, The Great Muppet Caper, literally The Great Muppet Caper on. Because then it's very much, the opening song of Great Muppet Caper is Hey, a Movie. So it's very much from there on, it's okay, they are not just television actors, they're also movie actors. And you do see a little bit of it. You see a little bit of a difference between the two. But that's what I love about the Muppet movie, is that it's very much the Muppet Show show mixed with, like, it's the first time, like, they saw, like, the deeper levels of these characters, like, of Kermit, Fozzie, Rolf, Gonzo. Like, you see, like, who they are as people aside from the 90-second acts that you'll see on The Muppet Show.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that really garnered a lot of favoritism for Gonzo was watching him sing I'm Going Back There Someday, because that is not something I think a lot of Muppet fans at that time expected to see out of him, of all characters, singing in that very first movie. But yeah, there's something very real, because I look at those first three movies, especially the first one, differently than I do the later ones, because I see those characters interacting with each other back then the way you kind of sort of see the Simpsons characters interact with each other. Like, yeah, there's a lot of jokes on The Simpsons, but it's amazing, like, some of the heartfelt moments that happen on The Simpsons between two characters you wouldn't think had anything in common with each other.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating to me when you see writers like Jerry, and see where they can take these characters. And it's very fascinating to see, like, what kind of emotionality, what kind of jokes, feeling out the character, what are their likes and dislikes, what sets them off. It's fascinating to watch that, because it's still very much, because you got to understand, that's smack dab in the middle of the Muppet Show years. And so to do a movie, it was just like, wow, they're going from the show to a movie. That's pretty awesome. And it was a huge hit when it landed in the summer of 79.
I would say, like, as a little kid, I really liked Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yes.
The songs and just them being like, oh, we did musicals together in college and we want to, you know, put on a great show in New York City and having their dreams come true. And then just having all the Muppets, like, I remember seeing Big Bird in the audience, like, oh my gosh, Big Bird is at the wedding. Like, how cool is that? I think I love for the moments where the Sesame Street Muppets will get together with the Muppets and do things together.
It's really cool to see those moments. Like, as a kid, I was just like, that is so cool, you know. And there's a couple episodes where different Sesame Street characters show up on the Muppet Show as well.
Yeah. And then you had mentioned Muppet Treasure Island, which I feel like my sisters and I quote things from that movie to this day.
Yeah.
Like the part where the rat is, he's on like one of the boats, like,
yes,
jet ski, and he's like, I'm getting tired. What? He says go faster. Like, we would do that all the time.
Yes. My sister and I quote that exact same line.
Yeah.
I love it.
Clueless Morgan, who, like, yes, and correct me wrong, was that like his first appearance as a
Muppet? That was Bill Beretta's first, like, lead in the movies. This is before even Pepe came along.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like, Clueless Morgan was hilarious.
Yes.
And then Tim Curry.
Perfect.
Being the
perfect
villain.
Casting.
Like, I remember I had my kids watch that with me for the first time when he pulled Jim over to kidnap him. Like, when I was like, he looks familiar. He's like, he reminds me of, I can't remember how it happened, but she discovered that this actor is the same guy who played It, the original, and Rooster in 1980. Annie, and then she's like, he's always taking someone's kid. I'm like, yeah.
That's hilarious.
He scared the crap out of me as a kid. Like, from what I've heard, like, a few years ago, I did like a voiceover class with a voiceover actor, Charlie Adler.
Really?
And yeah. And he's really good friends with Tim Curry. And he said Tim Curry is like actually a really nice guy. Like, he just has that face. And
yeah,
people, like, I feel bad because, like, people talk about his face, like, to his face. It was, like, a clip of this lady she was interviewing just different celebrities. And she would just say these, like, off-the-wall rude things to them. And then she was just like, look at that face. That's a criminal's face. Or, like, she was just, like, saying that about him. I'm just like, that's so rude. Like, this is a human being.
Sure. You're taking some chances being that open.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But so yeah, I have to ask you, what were some things that you learned about voice acting? Because I'm fascinated by that as well.
Just how, like, people try to separate it, where it's like, oh, voice acting and this acting, and, like, it's just acting.
Yeah.
And how to, like, get into a character, really understanding the maybe, like, any backstories and stuff, and just, like, bringing that into it and just being creative with it.
Yeah.
And not being afraid to try different things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's actually something that you hear a lot with the Muppets. You cannot be afraid. If you're in this, then to be shy about making a fool of yourself is... then that's not the job for you. Because that's Frank Oz. I'm going to be quoting Frank Oz a lot here because I'm fascinated by like kind of like how he's laid down some of like the rules and the guidelines for not just performing the Muppets, but in terms of just, you know, working in a fictitious setting. He said when he first started, there were a number of years he couldn't get a voice out. He couldn't do a voice. Jim would always voice over any performance that he had done. And finally, he just told himself, if you can't be good, be loud. And so that's what kind of got him started on doing different characters like Cookie Monster, Grover, and Bird on Sesame Street. Those were basically, yeah, his first real, like, here's Frank Oz, like, you know. So, but yeah, I'm very fascinated by people who work in voice acting. I mentioned, you know, The Simpsons earlier. People like Dan Castellaneta, Harry Shearer, Hank Azaria. Those guys are just, you know, Julie Kavner, Yardley Smith. They are such fascinating actors and actresses. Because you're right, that's really what it is. Like, yeah, you're using a different voice and you're utilizing a different part of your throat, but it is acting all the same.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's like, yeah, you may be able to do an impression of a character, but like to really put that voice into what's going on, that's a skill that has to be developed.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a lot of trial and error too, because if you look at how Fozzie and Gonzo and Piggy, it's funny, like Kermit and Rolf and Scooter, some of those guys, like their voices were pretty much the same throughout. Mm-hmm. But then you get, you know, some other characters, their voices were way different. And in some cases, like Piggy was split up between Frank Oz and Richard Hunt in that first season of The Muppet Show.
Okay.
And like Richard would do him sometimes, but most of the time during that first season, it was Frank Oz. And there's that famous number, I don't know if you've ever seen the very first episode of The Muppet Show, is Julia Prowse. The closing number is Miss Piggy singing Temptation with a group of chorus, like pigs and frogs and chickens. And that is voiced entirely by Richard Hunt singing.
Okay.
And it does not sound like the Piggy you and I know at all.
Okay.
It's fascinating.
I have seen, but like I'll need to watch it again to see what you're talking about.
Yeah. Do you remember Gladys the Cow from Sesame Street?
Yes.
That's the voice Richard used for Piggy back then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of that voice he was using.
Okay. Nice.
But yeah. Trial and error.
Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit more about Richard, because that's actually how I found you. I was just like scrolling on my podcast page and I saw your review of this like biography about his life. And he kind of is like a lesser known puppeteer compared to Frank and Jim. But over the last couple of years, I've been hearing a lot more about him just from other like sources and stuff. But you just like gave up this really great review about like his life. And I was just like, wow, I need to read this book. It sounds really interesting. So like just kind of like tell me like some of the things that you kind of learned from
I learned a lot from that book. And I'm somebody like when it comes to educating myself about the things that I really love, I won't put a book down. I won't stop watching a movie. I'll watch a documentary multiple times. I want to know everything. And what I loved about that book is that there were so many things I never knew prior to reading it. It was just so fascinating. He was such a fascinating guy. One of the things that Richard was known for, I love that Frank Oz is in this book quite a bit. He talks quite a bit about working with Richard and watching him evolve. He goes, you know, Jim set the tone for who these Muppets are and what the humor is. He goes, but Richard personified it. He honed in on it. He really used it. He found the best way to get a joke out of a scene, even when it wasn't really his scene. You know, he knew how to upstage. He knew how to develop a character. Like Jerry Nelson, he was a phenomenal singer. He was especially fascinated with opera. So you get characters like Wayne of Wayne and Wanda from The Muppet Show, who they were only on the first season. Yet Wayne has an operatic voice. When that character got dropped a few years later, there was a character on Sesame Street developed just for Richard named Placido Flamingo, after the famous opera. Yeah. Opera singer Placido Domingo.
Yeah.
And such a great, like, it's such a great book because you understand how seriously he took it, but also at the same time, fun he really had. Like, he really just, he was over the moon with his job. There's even, mm-hmm. I remember hearing on one of, you know who Bill Beretta is? He has a podcast called The Beretta Brothers. And Bill Beretta, he does Clueless Morgan in Treasure Island. Yeah, he does Pepe, Bobo the Bear, Johnny Fiamma. But anyway, he was mentioning in one of his podcast episodes, he goes, there's a number of times when Richard was performing Sweetums, the monster, and he was butt naked inside because it gets super hot in there. So he'd be doing a scene with like John Cleese or Cloris Leachman or singing something. And yeah, like he'd just be naked underneath it. And nobody knew it until afterwards, you know. But he was somebody who was constantly just trying to do good work. He wanted characters that he didn't just want to put a puppet on his hand and wiggle some strings. He wanted to bring these characters to life. He wanted them to have, you know, depth, compassion, silliness. You know, he was a man who was always looking for meaning in his work, and it made him a tremendously fascinating guy. Now, one of the sadder aspects of Richard's career was that during that time of the Muppet Show, when they were just, really, they were the Beatles. The Muppets were the Beatles from 76 to 81. And throughout the 80s, to be quite honest, but there was a dividing line that was getting, the gap was getting bigger and bigger between Jim and Frank and Richard Hunt, Jerry Nelson, and Dave Golds. Mm-hmm. And Richard and Jerry in particular, this hurt them quite a bit because they always, you know, considered this an ensemble group. And they even mentioned in the book many, many times, Richard considered himself as a part of the original five, which was Jim, Frank, Richard, Dave, and Jerry. And when he saw that gap between the three of them and Jim and Frank get wider and wider, it really hurt.
Yeah.
And there were times when, like, look, Richard was not a perfect man. There were times when they would be at a party, they'd be at a rap party for a show or a special or a movie, and Richard would make comments about Jim's wealth in front of other people, and it would he would make comments to Jim to where Jim didn't know what to do, so he would just turn around and walk away because he was so embarrassed.
Yeah.
And, you know, Richard had always kind of felt during this period like maybe Jim didn't respect him the way that he initially thought he was respected, or at least didn't live up to the way Frank did. Mm-hmm. But then you see, if you ever get a chance, there is the Jim Henson Memorial on YouTube. And Richard was asked specifically by Jim in his will to lead any sort of procession or funeral gathering or memorial that might happen when Jim passed. Oh. He wanted Richard because, and this is something else I loved about finding out about the book, at those same rap parties where Jim had to get up and thank the cast, the crew, and everybody in between, Jim could not find the words. He was a very shy man. When that would happen, he would essentially, it got to be a thing where he would call Richard up, and now Richard's going to say what I want to say for me.
Yeah.
And Richard would put, he would say exactly how Jim felt. He would throw in jokes. He would throw in like inside comments, you know. You know, Jim really respected Richard more than Richard had thought for quite a long time. And when he was asked to perform the memorial service after Jim's passing, like that was kind of like a validation of like, wow, like all this time, you know, I've been worried about how my boss had seen me. And, you know, like it turns out, you know, like he really thought extremely high of me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that has to have been like an honor. I've seen clips of his, like, because I guess he had two different funeral services. Is that correct?
So
like one in New York and one in London.
I forget where it was.
Or was it just New York? Okay.
Well, I was gonna say I forget where it was, but I do believe there was one that wasn't filmed. That's the one I know for sure. But the one that is filmed, of course, is the one that you see on YouTube, and that's the one where it's just like the church. It's a massive church, and there's not a seat left in the entire place. You know, you get these little kids walking in with like Kermit and Ernie dolls and Big Birds and oh my God. And then of course, you know, everybody was given a Muppet butterfly on a stick and the butterflies were all different colors. They were made by Jim Henson's workshop. Yeah, like just the little lovely details that were put in to celebrate his life.
Yeah. One moment that sticks out from that service for me was Big Bird, played by the late, great Carol Spinney, singing It's Not Easy Being Green. Is that right? Yeah, that's what he sang. And, like, wow, I saw him talking about it in his own, like, it was a movie called, what's it called? Based on, it was Carol Spinney talking about his life, and I can't think of the name of it.
Oh, was it the documentary, I Am Big Bird?
Yeah, I Am Big Bird. I was like, because it sounded so simple, and I'm like, no, it can't be just that. But yeah, I Am Big Bird.
Yeah. again.
Yeah, I love watching that documentary. Yes. Full disclosure, I think Big Bird was one of my first crushes as a kid. So,
that's adorable.
I kept getting older and he kept staying sick. So,
it worked. Oh, that's sweet, though. That's sweet.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of moments. It's amazing that the entire memorial service is so heartfelt. Like when I watch that and I see Harry Belafonte singing, or Duncan Kenworthy talking about the London crew, just all these really beautiful, special moments. And it is amazing to me, Richard does not break. He holds it together so well. And another thing that fascinated me about the book is that during that time in his life, he knew that he was HIV positive, and B, he had already lost a number of people to the virus, most notably his ex-lover, Nelson Bird. He had witnessed quite a bit with the AIDS epidemic in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it almost, honestly, I don't know how to phrase this, in a very difficult way, it prepared him to do what he did for Jim Henson. Because he not only holds it together so well, he speaks so eloquently and lovingly about Jim and his work and his influence. And it's just, to this day, I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, wow, like, Frank Oz is crying, Big Bird, Carol Spinney is obviously crying by the end of It's Not Easy Being Green.
Yeah.
I was so amazed that Richard, through the entire thing, held it together so well. And that book explains why very well.
Yeah. Yeah, you made a good sell for the book. Like, I'm definitely going to be looking for it to read.
Yeah. I know you can order it on Amazon. I don't know if it's in stores, but it is on Amazon.
Okay.
So, yeah, the author, she did a fantastic job. Such a great job that I would love to see her do books on some of the other performers with the Muppets. Most notably, I would love to see a book on Jerry Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
She even talks about in the book, like, even before Nelson started working with Jim Henson in the 60s, that he basically had like this Forrest Gump life where you would not believe the places he was at. You would not believe the jobs he had, the people he worked with, the famous people he worked with. So to have that kind of life leading up to the Muppets is pretty spectacular on its own.
Yeah, thank you for that conversation. But before anyone, sure, yeah. Like, what were some of the other voices that, like, Richard Hunt did, just for those of us that are, who may not know?
Because, yeah.
Like, you named the Count, you named Gladys.
Who Richard did?
Yes.
So Richard, it's funny, like, so here's a bit of trivia. Richard, every puppeteer who works for the Muppets has to spend a number of years right-handing characters. Meaning, when you get characters who have live hands, like Fozzie or Bunsen Honeydew, the performer who the character is known for, like Dave Goles, he does Bunsen Honeydew. He's doing the voice and he's doing the left hand. There needs to be another person doing the right hand because, they're moving around, they're grabbing objects, etc. So for a number of years on Sesame Street, Richard Hunt was learning by right-handing, and he'd done it for like 4 or 5 years. And finally, I think it was 19, he was finally told, okay, you're getting your first character, but there's a catch. This character does not speak. Sully, do you know who Sully and Biff were on Sesame Street? The
I think I do. He's a construction crew. Okay,
So Sully was played by Jerry Nelson. He was the guy who's always like loud and talking and just kind of like missing the obvious in those sketches. And Biff was the quiet one who never spoke and like clearly saw what was wrong and fixed things himself. And that was Richard's first character, but he never spoke. Then in the second season of him doing the Sully and Biff thing with Nelson, he had done a bit with Linda, the deaf woman, on Sesame Street. And he had decided, I forgot if that was his first year as Biff or the second year, but he had decided, you know what? I don't want him to speak. He is going to be the Muppet who is deaf. And so he's always been a silent character. And then he's done some other characters. He's one of the halves of the Two-Headed Monster. He's the one with the wide eyes and the horns that are going up.
Okay.
Placido Flamingo, Forgetful Jones, Gladys the Cow.
I love Forgetful Jones.
Yes, love Forgetful as a kid. Gladys the Cow. Yeah, he's done a number of different roles. On Fraggle Rock, he did Junior Gorg. He did Gunge, which is the gray little rat with Marjorie the Trash Heap. And then on Sesame Street, his most famous two are probably Scooter and Statler. Statler of Statler and Waldorf. Scooter, who, one thing that's really cool, Richard, for 3 years running, his characters got the first line in every episode and the last, one of the last lines of every episode. Because Scooter would say, hey, 15 seconds to curd, Mr. Steve Martin.
Right.
And yeah. Then the closing of the episode was Statler and Waldorf making a joke.
Right.
And then when you watch the Muppet movie, the very first line is Statler opening up the window to the door. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm Statler. And then Waldorf introduces himself. And then the last line of the movie is Sweetums bursting through the screen saying, I knew I would catch up with you guys. So Richard has had quite the privilege with many of his characters.
Yeah. So I know, like, earlier you had mentioned you like Saturday Night Live, and you mentioned, I always get the names right. Statler.
Yeah.
Am I saying it right?
And Statler Waldorf. And Waldorf. Yeah. They're named after they're named after hotels in New York.
Okay.
So there's the Statler Hotel.
Did you see the episode where they were doing the Muppet Show parody and it was, Keenan Thompson? Yes.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard watching that. Like, I felt sorry for the Muppets getting beat up, but like, it was kind of funny.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Statler and Waldorf, they were named after hotels. So Waldorf is named after the Waldorf Astoria Hotel.
Okay.
There is an episode in The Muppet Show, I want to say it's Dizzy Gillespie, where Statler is sick and Waldorf brings his wife. What is his wife's name? Astoria.
Okay.
And Waldorf has always been married to the same woman. You only meet her once, but he's always been married to the same woman.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, it's funny, like, when you watch the Muppet Show, even when watching characters that you think they're basically, you know, two halves of, you know, the same coin, when you really start to, like, listen to what they're joking, even though they are just jokes, they're, for all intents and purposes, they are jokes for that episode. But it is interesting, like, what they are talking about, what they are joking about. Like, okay, like, Statler is different in this way, Waldorf is different in that way. One of my favorite numbers on the show, basically it's the episode where Kermit has a birthday, and Statler and Waldorf sing Frank Sinatra's It Was a Very Good Year up in the balcony. And it's a very beautiful rendition of the song. Yeah, that's another thing I really loved is that Richard Hunt was always a jokester. Even as a young kid, he was always like the instigator in putting on shows and performances. But he was also somebody who really loved those sweet moments when they came along at the right time. One of his favorite numbers, his favorite number came from season 2. I think it's the Bob Hope episode. They sing that famous song from the 60s, For What It's Worth. You know, the song, Stop, Hey, What's That Sound? Everybody, yeah. What's going? So they do that with, like, woodland creatures. Like, there's a possum here. Yeah. And that was Richard Hunt's favorite number they ever did on the show.
Yeah, thank you for, like, all of this, like, history and details a lot of us don't know about.
Yeah.
Kind of just about Muppet history. So, like, I know, like, you had mentioned that you have, like, extensive knowledge on puppet bills. So, like, I'd like to hear that, but just keep in mind, a lot of us don't know a lot of technical things. So,
well, and I gotta tell you, look, I've never built a single puppet in my life. Okay. I can just tell when they've updated a character.
Okay.
You know, for example, from season 1 into season 2, you'll notice Gonzo's eyelids start to move. Like, because in season 1, he has, like, these blue, like, sad little eyes that don't move. The eyelids don't move. Then in season 3, I think it was Jim Henson who rebuilt the Gonzo puppet. Maybe it was Dave, but one of the two rebuilt the Gonzo puppet and gave him eyelids to give him more expressive emotions.
Yeah.
Which, it's one of my favorite features on any character when they have something like that. Eyebrows, eyelids. You get characters like Wembley Fraggle who they can just go round and round. That's such a cool little feature. But yeah, I can always tell when they've updated the character. And between the 70s all the way, I want to say until the mid to late 90s, I want to say it kind of capped off, I want to say around the looks of the puppets don't look quite as sharp from then on.
Okay.
Like, if you look at puppets today, they're very cushy, very soft, plush-like.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, this is only my opinion, but I don't think Sam the Eagle should be in a plush doll form. You know, like, he's a very serious character, you know. But when you look at, like, the original builds and see how different characters, like Floyd in the first season, he's wearing sunglasses. And then for whatever reason, this is just how I've always explained Floyd.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they changed him. They gave him eyes like Manamana, where his eyes, they just do this little thing where you put the fingers inside Floyd's eyes and you press down and they blink.
So, oh, okay.
It's like, I've always considered it his sunglasses blank. So, but yeah, like you get little things like that. You know, some of the obvious ones that people know, like Kermit's collar. He had a double collar in the 60s. And then, like, I think it was like a year or two before The Muppet Show, he just had his famous single 11-point collar. But yeah, something else. I don't know if many people know this, but in the Brian J. Jones biography of Jim Henson, they talk about how right before they were getting ready to film the Muppet movie, the company that was making the fleece that they had made Kermit out of at that time went out of business. They ran out of the material. So they had to go with a new form of material, Antron fleece, which is how Kermit is built to this day.
Okay.
So, for example, if you watch like a season 2 episode, and you'll see, call it fabric pull. You see a lot of like stretching where there's a lot of creases, especially in the neck area with Kermit. He starts to lose that over time from like the Muppet movie on. Now, there's always a little bit around the collar. One thing I actually loved about the Palisades line is that they included the fabric pull around the neck when they built the figure of Kermit.
Have you ever gone to like some of the museums that have some of the Muppets? Like I've gone to the Muppet Museum in Atlanta, Georgia a number of years ago.
Too.
And got to see, like, I think they said it was like their original.
Yes, which how cool is that, by the way?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, and I'll tell you what, so I have a friend of mine who built me a Kermit puppet, and superb builder, just, and one of the nicest Muppet friends I've ever made. He built me one, and I absolutely love it. We actually worked together. I did want something between Take Manhattan and the Muppet movie, because there was a short period during The Great Muppet Caper where they used kind of a fuzzier fabric for Kermit, where it's the only time after The Muppet Show where you see a slight gap underneath Kermit's eyes and his face, and that's because it's so fuzzy that they couldn't get the eye, like, on the head.
Okay.
So, but anyway, yeah, like, that's the only, and you see a couple other characters like Scooter and Rolf, that they kind of went with that same material. But yeah, when I worked with him on building it, I did say, I wanted some from a cross between the Muppet movie and the Muppet Take Manhattan. And he did a great job. Now, I'll go ahead and put him on, but I will tell you and everybody who's listening, I don't do the voice. If I'm not 80% there, I won't do it at all. So yeah, let me put him on real quick. Sure, sure. Let me see here. This goes in the top part, and then this goes like down the back of his throat from the bottom of his mouth, down his neck and into where the styrofoam body or the foam body starts. So, but yeah, that's how he sits, like with his mouth open, so his mouth isn't like just drooped the whole time.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. So. I like the, like he's doing the thing where like he kind of like moves like his neck. It's almost like a nervous thing that he does.
Yeah. Now he's known for that. And Steve Whitmire, like, really kind of personified that when he took over as Kermit.
Mm-hmm.
That little arm right here. And then I had a friend of mine stitch his right arm just so that it's easier to work the left arm like that. So, and he's got his feet. So, and that, like, the mouth, it's perfectly malleable. Anybody who has their hand up in him can do any kind of expression they want to.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah, that is so cool. I need to up my Muppet game. I got like a red frog on the back, but it's I got it from my local children's museum. Like it's not,
yeah.
You know, like I need to up my game.
Well, that's the thing. I knew there's only a few characters I would want to have built. And I was like, well, Kermit's the simplest. And when you hear people like Bonnie Erickson or Michael K. Frith, who they're responsible for like the look of the Muppets in the 80s, the 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s. When you listen to them talk about Kermit, they talk about like, you know, he really is just like a sock, like a glorified sock wrapped around your arm. And it looks simple, but there's a lot of, the simplicity is very deceiving because you have to get the neck right. You can't have the collar be too long or too wide.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let the fingers like flatten off or cap off. They have to be rounded. Yeah, like even just, it's amazing when you look at him up close, just all the little tiny movements and emotions you can get.
Yeah.
And it's times like this where I wish I sounded like Jim because then I could do it and have a little fun. But what I have done in the past, I actually uploaded a thing the other day on one of the Muppet pages. I'll take a scene from The Muppet Show where it's just really mainly Kermit talking and I'll lip sync to the video. So yeah, it looks like, you know, it's almost like a TikTok video. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's It's kind of like that.
You guys will have to look for the video. I'm going to video this, even if it's just a clip. This is so cool. Because, like, the way you're doing the mouth movements and stuff is very accurate. It just goes to show how much work these actors, these puppeteers, put into this.
And it's God help me. I don't care if I'm 40. This is one of the most cool things, like, the coolest thing I own. You know?
Uh-huh. I'll say. Yeah.
It's because, and it's not about, like, just owning the thing. It's about if you're obsessive like I am and you get to actually play around with something like this, you get to have fun, you get to see what they're doing, you get to see how hard they work. Because a lot of people, there's a number of misconceptions people have about the Muppets. First of all, some people think that the people voicing them are not the puppeteer underneath. They think they're separate jobs. These performers are underneath these, every one of these characters, putting all of their acting skills into one hand. Two, yes, but mainly one hand.
Yeah.
Secondly, gosh, it's weird. Like, there's so many different things that people just don't know about how these characters work. Okay, here, I'll go with some of the other stuff that people don't know. These performers all work with a monitor at their feet, whether they're standing or they're sitting down or crouched down or wedged underneath the couch or behind the car seat. They don't understand. Like, they have to watch every little thing. I'm only able to get Kermit's expressions right as I'm talking to you because I'm looking at myself performing him on the phone. These guys are watching themselves, and they're fiddling with it. They're finding out what kind of expressions can I get out of them. What happens when, I open their mouth, fold the face. Like, everything that they do, they're learning on the fly with a little monitor that's either strapped to their chest or on the floor. And, that's where a lot of they're building on the character. So, and it looks like I'm nowhere near the performer these guys are. And it looks like a lot of hard work, but it looks like a lot of fun when you see it pay off. So...
That's very cool. Thank you so much for showing that. I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you like him. He's a decent build.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thank you so much.
Of course.
So for those of you who won't be able to or aren't going to look at like a video of this, like in your background, you have so much like Muppet themed stuff behind you.
Yes.
How long have you been collecting it? Like, is this stuff from childhood or just like as an adult, you were just like, give me everything?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I had started collecting, like I had a lot of like Sesame Street plush dolls as a kid, but I had a few Muppets. I had Kermit, Piggy, Scooter, and Gonzo growing up. And then, like, it's funny, we had other stuffed animals. Like, we had a stuffed animal teddy bear that I just gave him Super Grover's helmet, and I tied, like, a red ribbon around his neck.
So, like, it's morbid to talk about, but, like, in the end, are you going to get a will and be like, my friend, I bequeath this?
I don't know what to do about that.
We're getting old. We have to start thinking about these things.
I know, but it's a fair question. I mean, you never know what could happen.
Yeah.
And
you would just need her to just go. Like, I recently helped a friend with their friend's, like, estate just trying to go through things. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know that they were going to die. And they weren't really that old. But just having to make that decision on who gets what, like, or what's important, you know? So, like, if you haven't already done that, because it's just so much stuff. And, like, I would hate for it to be, like, thrown in the trash or be like, I'm going to donate this to a daycare center or something like that.
It breaks my heart thinking something like that could happen because I could not. So I've been to the Atlanta Museum. I've been to New York. The museum there is beautiful, but the AC broke the day I went, so I wasn't there very long. I really feel bad. Oh, my, it was the worst. But I've also been down to Jim Henson's hometown of Leland, Mississippi, and the majority of their museum is collectible stuff from all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are beautiful pictures of like newspaper clippings and details of his life that chronicle from, his high school years all the way to his death. And I see the level in which they take care of the collectibles. And I have thought about if I did, for whatever reason, have to get rid of this, I would first and foremost want them to go to the Delta Boyhood exhibit of Jim Henson in Leland, Mississippi.
Okay.
But until then, I'm going to keep taking photos. I'm going to keep promoting my page.
Yeah.
Keep looking for, like new things that people might be excited to buy, read, watch, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I never would have thought, you had asked earlier, like, when did this start? Like, it really didn't start until high school. And I never would have thought that it would come to like this level of collecting. And I'm very happy. Like, I'm happy how it looks. You had said earlier, like, you know, it looks like a museum quality type of setting.
Yeah.
I love it when people come over because that's kind of the reaction I get. Because they look around, the majority of it is in here Muppets. But then they get like the Star Wars and Simpsons and stuff like that. And like, I have it like nicely displayed. So, and I got to tell you, this is something I love telling people. When I was in high school and the Muppet figures started coming out, I had a after school job, at a, you know, an after school and weekend job, and I would save my money to drive where my folks lived, which is way down in Waverly, Kansas, all the way up to Kansas City, which is an hour and 20 minutes from their place, as a sophomore in high school who just got his driver's license, driving in the city trying to find a Target or the mall. And like, that was what I was doing, like sneaking, like being sneaky as a high schooler.
Yeah.
You know, instead of partying and going out, that was the worst thing I did in high school, was sneak off to Kansas City and buy Muppet stuff.
That's hilarious.
But yeah.
Yeah.
And I gotta tell you, it's paid off. And that's another thing. Like, when I really started, like, seriously collecting, because when the Muppet figures came out, I was like, I really don't want to get such and such. I just want to get these characters. But then I'd, like, see them in the store and be like, they're beautiful. They're perfect. And so then I would start getting, like, the secondary and tertiary characters. And, like, I think I have all the ones from the main lines. I have most of the exclusives. I have all the play sets. Yeah. And I'm happy.
Do you have any of the records?
I have a couple of records. I got a Fraggle Rock one. And so they're back behind the bottom shelf. I got the Muppet. I got the Muppet movie. I got John Denver and the Muppets. And I got the Frog Prince. So those
are I love the Frog Prince. Yeah, like it. Sir Robin the Brave. And yes. That was another one that my sisters and I would watch all of the time.
Yeah. And like, it's funny, like, that's not when Richard Hunt was performing Sweetums, but that was when I kind of became fascinated with Sweetums, because I loved the big scary monsters on The Muppet Show. Like, the full body characters with giant teeth, crazy scary eyes, you know, like, Jim Henson had no problem scaring kids. He loved scaring kids, and he loved creating these like really decrepit and scary and looming monsters. And like, Sweetums, like, the first one, like, I was little and I was terrified of Sweetums, but then, like, as an adult, I was like, that is a very cool looking puppet.
Yeah.
Most people don't know, with Sweetums, when Richard Hunt was inside, he only had like just what I was using with Kermit, with one hand on the mouth and one hand on the rod. Richard would, in a lot of scenes, have the spare hand kind of like stapled to Sweetums' hip so that he can work the mouth and work the hand seamlessly. And nobody would ever think like, oh, the other hand's stapled because there's not room for two people in there. So those are just kind of like the little things you notice when you get older.
Okay. All right. So we are coming to the conclusion of this episode. It's been really great just like learning all this information. There's always someone who knows more than you about these things. Because like I could tell, I was just like, I'm going to learn a lot today. I can tell.
I talk to people who are older than me and they've been fans longer than me. Mm-hmm. Every week I'll talk to a couple of people who, you know, because they take in the Muppets in a different way, you learn something different from their point of view.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's great to just like hear things from different perspectives and
absolutely
having different favorites and stuff. Like, I think some people get weird about things like that. Like, my listeners know, like, I'm a big Doctor Who fan, and like, I'm like, everybody should have their favorite doctor. Like, and if it's different than yours, that's okay. Don't be a weirdo and try to like poo-poo that. Like,
yeah, exactly. Well, and then you get in some cases how like these characters have moved on from performer to performer, where something else is added that the previous performer didn't either utilize or think of or whatever you want to call it. Case in point, in The Muppet Christmas Carol, most people know Beaker as this panicky, you know, sidekick to Bunsen Honeydew.
Yeah.
You know, always getting terrorized and blown up and etc. One of my favorite moments of The Muppet Christmas Carol is when Beaker hands his scarf to Scrooge as a gift for, you know, donating and, you know, for seeing the light, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful little moment that Steve Whitmire did with Beaker after Richard Hunt had passed away that I thought was very loving and very sweet. Yeah, it's interesting. We're at the point now with The Muppets that you see little evolutions with characters that are very... very specific, lovely, sometimes weird, mm-hmm. but like ultimately it's interesting because they are not afraid to try new things, just like the old people were not afraid to try
new things. Yeah. And like, I think if you have someone who's like came in on the new stuff, if they really get into it, they're going to want to look at the older stuff.
Absolutely.
So, and the stories are continuing, which I think is great.
I agree. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, is there anything, cause like you mentioned your page, but like tell us like, you know, where we can find you or anything else that you.
Sure. So I have a couple things people can follow me on. First and foremost, obviously, is the Muppet Collection page, and it's on Facebook. Again, I've been running it 8 years, and I love showcasing people's other collections. I've featured collections from all regions of the planet. It's been incredible. Like the things people have shown me that I would have never even thought existed. Mm-hmm. And the love behind their collections is really special. You can also follow me on Instagram. I have my own handle. I am thinking about creating another Instagram handle for the Muppet Collection page on Instagram. Uh-huh. Just to have something that people can go to if they just want to look at the photos and that's it. But personally, I love to write. Like whenever there's a book or a movie or something out that I am already interested in, I love to sit down, read it, watch it, take it in. And then like if I'm doing it like a review, like if I'm writing a review, it'll take me, and I split it up, of course, it'll take me somewhere between like 3 to 5 hours to write. Because I want it to be in my voice. I want to choose my words carefully.
Yeah.
Kind of like what you were saying about Doctor Who, I never want to be somebody who says of the Muppets, this stinks and this rocks. Because mm-hmm. either way, it's not appealing to what somebody else might be looking for. So when I'm really, like the Richard Hunt book, which I'm so glad you brought it up, and I'm so glad you read the review. Richard has always meant a great deal to me because like you had mentioned, he was one of the more, he wasn't as celebrated as some, you know, Jim and Frank. So when that book came out, I was like, I want to know everything about this guy. And then when I finish reading about this guy, I want to tell everybody as much as I can mm-hmm. while still giving them the urge to buy the book.
I think so. I think there'll be more people looking for that book after.
I
know I will be.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, I forgot my Instagram handle is earlesswonder85. So yeah, earlesswonder85. Okay. Named it. It was a nickname somebody gave me when I was in middle school. I was born without my right ear. He gave it to me when I was gone for some ear doctor thing. And so it just kind of stuck. Instagram for the first time, I was like, okay. I didn't want to just use my name. So that's what I went for.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I probably show one or two new photos a week on Instagram.
Well, listeners, you can find me on Facebook, Quirky Pop Podcast. Same with Instagram. I lurk on Twitter these days. I'm on Threads, but as my name, Katrina with the C, T Parker. Yeah, or you can follow me like my regular page too. Like I have like a personal Facebook page and I will share some things with the public and just some things I want to keep private because, you know, I have a family and stuff.
Sure.
But thank you for listening and we will see you next time.
See ya.